wooden sticks, coals of fire, are themselves consumed by it. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimadhi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dharame Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Prasharane Nirvishesha Srimadhi Paskarya Shatarane. As mentioned here, there are two causes of material existence. One is the desire to lord it over the material nature. Sounds rather esoteric, but basically the desire to be happy in the material world, find material comfort, security, friendship, love, and how to win friends and influence people is what people are concerned about. How to make, basically in Kali Yuga, how to make money so we can enjoy sense gratification. Because if you don't have any money, usually you don't have any friends. And if you have a lot of money, you have a lot of friends. Because you can enjoy sense gratification with them, and they can enjoy sense gratification with you. So the real purpose is of loitering over the material nature is to enjoy sense gratification, somehow or another, on one plane or the other, on the subtle platform, it's I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, and on the gross platform, one is satisfying the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. So this is called fruitive activities. Working into the world to get the fruit, mainly economic development, but sense gratification. On the other hand, after enjoying sufficiently sense gratification, and economic development, one still may feel frustrated. When they realize that actually people don't love me, they love my money. And without my money, there is no love. And therefore, actually I'm just falsely enjoying the material world. Therefore, let me become free from all material entanglement. And ultimately, I can become prominent by escaping from material existence, unlike all these other foolish living entities, and ultimately establish myself as Brahman, eternal, infallible, indestructible, better than everyone else. And there's a sense of peace in Brahman because there's no anxiety. Everyone in the material world has anxiety to maintain their body, which cannot be maintained. The fruit of our false ego, of being better than everyone else, is the body. And in the body we compete, with the body we compete to become still better than everyone else in some way or another. But we always lose because we lose the body. Therefore, there's an endless struggle. We wind up in the bottom, we work our way up, and then we lose everything, we're back in the bottom again. So after some time, realizing that whatever I'm working hard now for, I may be a great scientist, I may be a great philosopher, I may have so many degrees, so many PhD degrees, or MD degrees, or whatever, I may have so much money in the bank, but very shortly, I'm going to have zero again. I start all over. Not only I start all over, but whatever, if I perform any sinful activities in order to get my wealth or my position, then I'll have to suffer my next lifetime for it. So not only I can't really enjoy all these things, but I have to suffer trying to get them. Therefore, one becomes frustrated and thinks, let me get free from all this endeavor for economic development and sense gratification. But if one doesn't have any conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or one's relationship with God, with Krishna, then one has to simply be aloof from material conceptions of life, from material activities. One comes to the platform of Brahman, but is rather compared to eternal existence, it's rather happiness, freedom from all distress, but after some time, after a long period of time, compared to our period of time, one becomes bored and then seeks after sense gratification again. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Dumena Riyate Varnir, Itara Darsho Malena Cha, Itovena Rita Zarabas, Tita Tene Dam Abrita. Just like the Dumena Riyate Varnir, just like the fire is covered by smoke, Dumena Riyate Varnir, Itara Darsho Malena Cha, or the mirror is covered by dust, Tita Tene Rita Zarabam, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, so the living is covered by different degrees of lust. In other words, this body, which is a product of our desire, previous desires, the Lord will to try to enjoy the material nature somehow or another and control it, to always enjoy it. And our desire, our enviousness of God, that why should there only be one God? There should be at least two gods. So our enviousness has produced this material body. But because we're servants of this desire to become God, which is born out of lust and envy, therefore the body, more or less, is covering us with lust and envy. So we're surprised that there's some envious, lusty thoughts. Well, just like if you were in the middle of the ocean, would you be surprised if you were surrounded by water? So, since the body is a product of lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, so therefore, that's what we're surrounded by. And here it mentions also, Avritam Gyana Etena Gyani Noni Devarina Kamarupena Kuntia Dusprena Analena Cha. That's a man's pure consciousness. In other words, we're all spiritual souls and our consciousness is originally pure. But now our consciousness is focused upon this body, which is a product of lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, and illusion. And therefore, although we see the gross body, but we also have this experience of these subtle manifestations of material existence. And Avritam Gyana Etena Gyani Noni Devarina. Our original consciousness, our pure consciousness, first of all, that we're eternal. Everyone is struggling to avoid death, but actually we don't die. And all our struggles to avoid death don't make us any more eternal than we already are, because we're already eternal. You can't become more eternal than you already are. So all our struggle to avoid death is called Shrama Eva Hikeva. It's just a waste of time. Because we're in love with our material bodies, and therefore we don't want the body to die, although all our struggle hasn't changed the fact that the body keeps on changing at every moment. We haven't been able, since time immemorial, stop even one of our bodies from changing. And it doesn't look like we're doing a very good job right now of stopping this body from changing. Therefore, we're also wasting our time, because it's completely beyond our control how this body changes, or the fact that the body is changing. So the consciousness being absorbed in lust, anger, greed, envy, it's not that it makes the soul happy, but it says it burns like fire. Simply puts us into our illusion that we're accepting, identifying with this body, simply causes us to suffer. Although there's a promise by the material nature that in the future we'll be able to enjoy our lust, anger, and greed, but that future never comes. It never arrives. It's always in the future. And even for a moment, it appears that we're enjoying But that enjoyment is really just the absence of, mostly it's due to the absence of our hankering. It's like if you're beating your thumb with a hammer, it's very painful. And if you stop beating your thumb with a hammer for a second, it feels rather better. But why were you beating your thumb with a hammer in the first place? What is the benefit of beating your thumb with a hammer? And what is the big deal that you stop beating it? Why should one take so much credit? I feel so good. I'm not beating my hand with a hammer anymore. You never had to do it in the first place. So in the absence of hankering and lamentation because of temporary gratifying the desire of the senses is not real happiness. It's simply the absence of the constant pushing of the senses to enjoy. But that quickly goes away. Once the senses meet their objects, it doesn't last. It's only a very small part of time. And then they blaze even more. The example is given, if you have a fire and you pour excessive amounts of ghee on it, then temporarily it may appear that the fire has gone out. But the next moment it just blazes even greater, even more intensively. Therefore, as it says here, there is a solution to the problem. That is, add something else into the equation. All the attempts by karma, by jnana, and by yoga. By karma, we try to get everything necessary to gratify our senses. But we can see in modern society, people have everything to gratify their senses, but who is the person whose senses feel completely gratified? Who wakes up in the morning and says, oh, yesterday I slept, etc. Today I don't have to do any of those things because I feel so satisfied. Well, people in the Western world, especially, or now throughout the world, they have so much opportunity for sense gratification, but they're less satisfied. They're more insane than they were before. And so, the neophyte devotee, whatever advancement he makes by chanting, basically speaking, he learns that gratifying the senses, especially lust, anger, greed, will not satisfy him. So at least temporarily, one stops the process of trying to gratify the senses unrestrictedly. One follows four of the principles, at least externally, so that one feels some relief from the burning of lust, which is not increasing, but remains generally confined to the mental platform, which comes and goes. So when lust is burning oneself mentally, then one feels dissatisfied, almost ready to gratify the senses, but when one restrains them, it goes away. And therefore, gradually one becomes peaceful and realizes that by the potency of the holy name, by the potency of devotional service, I'm getting at least sufficient spiritual strength that I can restrain my senses from their objects and avoid the ever-increasing attraction to sense gratification, material objects, and all the different disturbances that are caused by these things. So the neophyte devotee generally feels himself quite expert. And now I've learned how to control my senses. I'm not under the control of lust, anger, and greed. So now I can indulge in lust, anger, and greed, and then chant Hare Krishna, and I become purified, and I can choose when and how to gratify my senses. So sometimes a neophyte devotee, he thinks, now I can go back to the material world because I've become an expert in material enjoyment. But if one stays conquers the senses a little bit more, then one realizes that actually there's not only I should avoid lust, anger, and greed, but there's something called the mode of goodness. And in the absence of lust, anger, and greed, there's a way of eating, there's a way of sleeping, and relating to others, and being free from anxiety, which actually makes me feel good about being in the material world, or at least less distressed being in the material world. So therefore, one wants nice food, prasadam, nice calm atmosphere, water which is purified, organic food, etc. One wants to live in the material world in a more refined way. And then one thinks one will become happy. And therefore one learns all the Vedic science, learns enough of the Vedic science in order to gratify the senses in a way which is quite refined and causes less disturbance. But then after some time one realizes that still I have to die, and that's the source of problems. So how to avoid death, how to avoid the other problems of material existence, like old age, disease, and death, how to go to a higher level of consciousness where these things won't disturb me, and therefore one seeks answers in the scriptures. One is not only happy to live in the association of devotees and eat nice prasadam and sometimes dance and chant, but one actually wants to find out what life is actually meant for. And then when one realizes that actually life is meant for liberation from material concepts and actually tries to control the senses and engage them in following Krishna's directions, get free from material conceptions, then one actually becomes a Brahman platform. But even then, unless one accepts actually that I'm not the center of existence, the whole endeavor that I'm endeavoring is not just to make me happy, but my real purpose of life is to make the Supreme Personality of Godhead happy. So that's rather a different conception, but that's the basis of all advancement, even from the neophyte stage to the liberated stage. Prabhupada was one time walking up the hill in New Vrindavan, and Bhavananda Prabhu was helping him. And when he got up, Prabhupada just threw his arms, Bhavananda's arms away and said, "Go away, I don't need you anymore." So Bhavananda Prabhu was quite surprised by Srila Prabhupada acting this way. I was helping up the hill, now he's throwing me away. And Prabhupada said, "This is like the impersonals. They take the help of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become liberated. When they become liberated, they just throw them away. We don't need you anymore. I'm liberated." But the devotee, he realizes that actually my problem is that now I'm trying to gratify this material senses and this body that I have, all the way from the gross material sense gratification to the subtle mind, I want to feel good, to the intellect, I want to know exactly what to do to get what I want, to the false ego, I want to become immortal, immortally recognized. I want to be appreciated, to be the center of existence. Why should God be the center of existence? I should be the center of existence. So, when one becomes liberated from those conceptions, then by the process, specifically of devotional service, one has to understand that actually Krishna, he's the real center of existence. And that is the basis of the philosophy. Itātura mula niṣe janena trityanti tatskanda vujo pushaka pranaharnaschayatendriyanam savaranam aputeja tatayva sarvahanam aputeja. Just like we water the root of the tree, then the water goes to the leaves and branches. If we supply food to the root, to the stomach, then all the food goes to the different parts of the body. Similarly, we serve the Supreme Lord that everyone, even the demigods, become satisfied. So to make Krishna the object of our endeavors in this material world. Now we're burning the fire of material desire. We're surrounded by our enviousness of Krishna, which is being manifest in the form of a gross and subtle material mind. But when we get the message that we should ignore these things, become aloof from them, and instead, whatever I'm doing, make Krishna the object of the center of my activities. Both ways, as explained here, one is to find out what Krishna wants us to do. That's the whole idea of reading the scripture. Not to enjoy, you know, or to become learned so I know how to control material nature more, or I avoid material miseries. But the idea of studying scripture is to find out, especially in the beginning, what does Krishna actually want me to do? Where am I? What is my duty here? How to perform that duty in such a way that it pleases Krishna? So that's studying the scripture. And when we understand that, and then we do it, that's called seva. Tadviri prana patena pari parshena sevaya upadeksham dite gyanam gyaninas tajadarshana. Why do we approach persons in this material world who know more than we are? Whether the materialist or the spiritualist, it's the same method. Submissive inquiry and service. If we want to find out who we are spiritually, even in the midst of our material existence, then we have to acquire from those who have the idea of who we are and what we're supposed to do. To find out who we are and to find out what we're supposed to do. Therefore, it's mission, inquiry, and service. And that's when it's submissive, inquiry is useless. If we go up to someone challenging, prove to me. Whatever they tell us, they'll never prove to us anything. Because we're not submissive. We already have the answer. We want to prove they're wrong. That's what we want. Whatever you open your mouth, you're wrong. So that kind of unsubmissive inquiry is useless. There's no learning. One doesn't hear what the other person is saying. One is simply waiting for the person to stop talking so that they can hear what we have to say. Because we know everything, and they know nothing. But we want to humor them, so eventually they surrender. Unless, if one actually has knowledge of the Supreme, and we're burning the fire of eternal existence, we're surrounded by the illusory energy, and therefore we're thinking ourselves to be gross and subtle material bodies, and by the influence of material nature, we may be in danger, so much danger, we may even take a lower form of life in the future. Maybe not in our next lifetime. Maybe by our devotional activities, we're going to this heavenly planet. My favorite officer is waiting there for me there. But after some time in the heavenly planets, we're back in downtown Melbourne. And we may not take up devotional service in the future at some time. And therefore, again, the cycle of birth and death, and again, we're a cockroach in someone's commode. Therefore, in the midst of this dangerous situation, this midst of this influences arising from the material energy due to our past activities, therefore, one has to inquire, what should I do in this circumstance, submissively, from those who have the intelligence and the knowledge of what to do, and then seva, actually try to put it into practice. It's not that we're going to become some expert, that as soon as we render a little service, then immediately Krishna will come from the altar and fall at our feet. Oh, my greatest devotee. I'm going to be serving. We're thinking like that due to fault. That's the manifestation of false ego. We're thinking ourselves very advanced, very expert, very qualified, very special, And therefore, that's the main influence of the false ego. Because the only qualification possibly we can think we have is all due to this body. And this body that we've acquired is all due to our sinful activities, our past material activities. It's like a prisoner, he's in a prison, and he's putting on Facebook his prison cell, saying that, I won the contest. I had the most beautiful prison cell in the prison block. There's nothing to be glorified being in prison. Anyone who is in a prison cell, it's embarrassing. So anyone who has a material body, they should feel embarrassed. I'm walking around in a prison because I'm a criminal. And I remain in the material world because I remain being proud of being a criminal. So humbly I should serve the orders of Krishna coming down in succession, finding out what they are, submissively trying to understand what they are, and as much as I've understood, try to apply them in my life, and hopefully we get the happy result of gradually becoming conscious of Krishna. And as we become conscious of Krishna, then as it says here, Itayam so samridoganir, bhasmat sadguru te arjuna, kenagini sarvakarmani, bhasmat sadguru te jitai. Just like the blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, so does the fire of transcendental knowledge burn to ashes all the reactions of our past activities. So as Krishna sees we're sincere, that we're steadily engaged in His service with enthusiasm, the service given to us by His authorities, by His representatives, then the result is, as Krishna appears in our life, in our existence, to our consciousness, then simultaneously Krishna burns to ashes all the reactions of our past activities, and gradually we're able to perceive and experience things as they really are in Krishna consciousness. And our desire to serve the demands of the senses and the mind gradually diminishes, and we become more enthusiastic to serve Krishna's desires, to understand what they are, and to put them into practice. So, those who are fortunate enough, they hear this philosophy, and those who are even more fortunate, they try to understand it. And the most fortunate are those who try to actually apply it within their lives and get some understanding and realization, enough that makes them more enthusiastic to hear more submissively, to hear and to understand more clearly, and then to apply more strictly with more enthusiasm what we've understood. Without that submission, without that inquisitiveness, without the hearing, without the application, then it all becomes very boring, because we're not really in spiritual life. We're in something that appears like spiritual life, but it's just a different variety. It's the actual motivation. It's not to please Krishna. We're keeping ourselves in the center, and because we keep ourselves in the center, therefore we don't make progress in spiritual life. We're simply trying to make progress in getting a better material life. Which is not bad, in one sense. But after a while, one will get bored, or one may even think, for instance, I may be in distress, I may want material comfort, I may be inquisitive how things are actually working, I may want to get free from all material entanglement. So that's good. We approach Krishna to Raina Bhakti Yogena, Kivete Purusha Para. Akama kama sarva moksha kama udari. So that's good, because we're approaching Krishna. But after a while, we may think, I don't even need Krishna. I can become free from, I can use my lusts as I want. I can become comfortable when I'm in the material nature. I can find out everything I want. I can get free from all of my anxiety. I don't need Krishna. I can enjoy the material world and at the same time be advanced in the material energy without Krishna. So generally speaking, one will take Krishna's help only to a certain extent in the material world, and then one will try to enjoy the material nature again, without any restriction, or with minimum restriction. But if one is fortunate, understand that actually our real benefactor at every stage is Krishna, and then realizes that if Krishna is benefiting me at every stage, why not take complete shelter of Krishna rather than taking shelter of his material energy? So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
So just with the material energy, right, taking shelter fully in the spiritual energy of Krishna,
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. That's our problem. Trying to enjoy the material nature and become spiritual at the same time. It's like being on having one foot on a boat, another foot on the shore, the boat's pulling out, and we're trying to keep our foot balanced, our feet balanced.
And that's the challenge.
Yeah, it's a challenge, or we're going to lose them. It's not going to work.
Thank you.
At around 6 feet, we're finished. Yes?
Mark, can you please explain an example of the dust covering the mirror and the fire coming from the smoke and the degrees?
Well, probably gives the examples in his purport. The embryo is covered by the womb. It is just like the living entities in a tree form. They're so entangled they can't even move. And the fire is covered by smoke, or the mirror is covered by dust. It's like in the animal forms of life. They have a little more consciousness, but they can't see anything very clearly. And the fire is covered by smoke as compared to the human being. Even in the when there's a lot of smoke, still there's a little manifestation of fire. And if the fire is handled carefully, then gradually the fire will blaze and the smoke will go away. So that's compared to the human form of life. But by proper understanding of things and proper activities, proper motivation, mood, and gradually material nature will diminish, one's material consciousness will diminish, and one's spiritual consciousness will become prominent. Anything else? Yes?
In Slokan, he says that all the devotion of samasthis become all the entities become satisfied. What is it exactly does that mean? Well, in that case,
it doesn't mean everyone becomes satisfied. Or if they do become satisfied, our little drop of devotional service won't overwhelm Brahmins. He doesn't fall off the lotus as we offer the arti to them. But we're doing whatever we're doing is beneficial for all living entities. It may not be perceivable by most at first, but still it's because it's spiritual. Therefore, it's beneficial for everyone. It's like one drop of water on the root of a tree. It doesn't satisfy the tree completely, but is beneficial for the whole tree. Because if one is a very powerful devotee, then obviously there's more spiritual energy there, and therefore more people will become appreciative or benefit, greater the benefit. Yes? Yes, anything. Yes, because we're not the doer. It's just hard for us to accept. But actually, it's all being done by the material nature or the spiritual energy. We're simply desiring. We're sitting there as a little soul, 1/10,000th the size of the bearer's size, and the super soul is there with us. He senses our desires just like one can understand the smell of a flower by being near it. Then he arranges it either through the spiritual energy or through the material energy to manifest different activities for us. So any talent, Krishna says, I'm the ability man. So any talent is really Krishna's talent. We just have a tendency to take credit for it. That's all. Yes.
Spiritual
and
material world is difficult for those who are...
Yeah, therefore it takes some practice. We have to make our... Our understanding is we make all our activities spiritual. We don't try and balance our material and spiritual activities. We make all our activities spiritual. So we don't eat, but we eat prasada. We sleep, but we try to dream about Krishna. We make, but we have children to bring them up in Krishna consciousness. We work, but we give the results of our work to Krishna. So therefore we spiritualize all activities so that there is no material activity. Yes?
Just
to
try to be self-satisfying, why do we need devotees' acquisition at the same time?
Because we're not trying to become self-satisfied. We're trying to satisfy Krishna. If you want to become self-satisfied, then merge in Brahman and become self-satisfied for a few little while, and then you'll become dissatisfied. It's not possible to become self-satisfied. The ultimate satisfaction is to please Krishna. Just like it's not possible to satisfy the body by supplying food to the eyes, it has to be supplied to the stomach. So Krishna is the stomach. We have to satisfy Krishna, then we'll become satisfied, and everyone else will become satisfied too. And we forget about Krishna, we'll never be satisfied, nor anyone else will ever be satisfied by our activities. One more question, yes?
Just with the material nature and spiritual nature, should we try to spiritualize our material endeavors?
We should do our activities under the guidance of Krishna and his representatives so that they become spiritual. We don't spiritualize anything. Krishna makes it spiritual. He either puts us under the spiritual energy or the material energy, depending on who we desire to serve. We desire to serve Krishna through his representatives by submissive inquiry and service, and he puts us under the spiritual energy. And if we serve lust, anger, and greed by lust, anger, and greed's representatives, then he puts us under the material energy.
So it's a conscious choice that we make that the super soul or Krishna.
We have to become inquisitive. What does Krishna want us to do? Then when he sees we're sincere, he'll tell us. And if we agree to do it, then he'll put us under the spiritual energy.
So there is always a clear distinction between the two energies.
Yeah, it's like, it's the same energy, but it can be used to heat or to cool, like a refrigerator or a stove. Electricity can be used to heat something or cool something. And the refrigerator generally is used to cool things. Stove, it heats things. So either thing will put us into illusion, or the one energy will put us into illusion, or the other energy will put us into Krishna consciousness. Same energy, but it's used according to how we desire.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Grandharaj Shimad Bhagavatam, Kijai. Shri Prabhupada, Kijai.